Hi, this is Brian Hurley from Lean Portland. I wanted to share a video that we took from a presentation done by Brock Huseby. It was focused around lean brain thinking, and I thought it was a good topic that I wanted to share with everybody. He had the it was really kind of him to put this together for us and let us get some insights on his thinking around lean. He's got a lot of great experience. He's worked in finance and IT and software development, healthcare and manufacturing. He's a licensed professional engineer, a certified scrum master, a lean coach, author, speaker and researcher. He's actually co-authored two books on lean, Lean Daily Management for Healthcare Field Book and Hoshin Kanri for Healthcare. So those are books you want to check out. I'll put a links in the show notes for that. There is some humming noise in the audio, so hopefully you can get past that and hear the message. So you'll hear Kel Van Zoon kick it off, and then Brock will give his presentation. Hope you enjoy.
The other thing we do as well, in order to like find people like your fine selves to help us, and also because like the best way to learn is to spend time with people who are much smarter than you and know more about lean, try and invite people to events like this and spend time with you. So we can all learn from each other. Normally our happy hour is once a month, every first Tuesday of the month, like today, but it's never been like this. This is a very new format. Usually it's anywhere from like 2 to about 20 people. Same today, but in a slightly different format, which is pretty cool. I also want to mention as well, real quick, before we get into today, besides events and besides helping people in nonprofits do lean, we also do some lean classes, and there's some little flyers there in the front you can pick up. We have a variety of different ones. We have one coming up called Holistic Financials. It's all about like applying lean to financial systems and how you can look at financial systems where you see people as an asset and not as an expense. We have a Lean Six Sigma introductory class coming up in January. And although it's not scheduled yet, we have a Lean Primer coming up in February as well. Those are all community-driven classes. If you can't afford to pay, you don't have to. If you can, you can make a donation, and it goes towards Lean Portland and puts on awesome events like this. So, but without further ado, I want to get going on tonight. We have Brock Huseby here presenting. He's written some books. He's an absolute lean nerd like all of us, and he's going to tell us a little bit about himself and then take it away.
Raise your hand, pull the end on cord, and I'll insert use the microphone. Mm-hmm. First of all, I want to thank everyone for having the opportunity to talk about this today. This is a topic that I'm just fascinated with. I think it's really interesting, kind of in the undercurrent of a lot of the work we do. So I also want to mention, I just moved to Portland back in January. Absolutely love it. I've never been involved with a group like Lean Portland before. I've never seen an organization like Lean Portland, any of the places that I've lived or worked. So I can't say enough good stuff about this group. It's really a cool organization. I'm really looking forward to getting more involved with it. So just a little bit about my background. Like I mentioned, I just moved out here in January, and I work at the Standard. I work with a bunch of people from here. Does anyone from the Standard raise your hand? It's a pretty large contingent. I worked in IT, the IT department there. I've been learning a lot. They're doing a great job with Lean. I really enjoyed being part of such a vibrant Lean program. But before this, I came from a very different kind of experience. Like, I'm an industrial engineer by background. I was initially introduced to Lean with Jeff Fleischer. I was exposed to him as an undergrad. He was the one that really inspired me to get into Lean. My early career was focused on trying to translate Lean into healthcare. And that's where I was for about the last 15 years. And that made the transition to working here at the Standard. So it's been quite a journey, but throughout this, I've seen a lot of different versions of Lean, lots of different applications, lots of different pros, lots of different cons to it, about the way it's applied to different organizations, and that really drove some of this thought about what's really the undercurrent of these different deployment methodologies that go on with Lean, these different decisions that Lean departments make on how they apply Lean, some of the different dynamics. So this is the basic structure. Trying to look at some of the research and findings from neuroscience, psychology, and other fields of lean practice. practices. And the intent of this is not to go super, super deep with these different topics, because each one of these topics would probably be an hour or a day-long presentation to go into that amount of depth. And my expertise in many of these topics is not anywhere near that deep. It's really meant to spur awareness, desire to learn more, and ask new questions. So that's really the intent of this. So as we go through this, keep that in mind. So these are some of the topics we're going to be talking about. The first one, kind of looking at, are we asking the right questions when we're doing things in our organization? And also going over some common, uncommon discussions among lean practitioners. You may agree with these or not agree with these, but I think you'll probably see some relevance to these if you're doing this for very long. Then looking at habit formation, what is culture, right versus left brain thinking, traditional versus cognitive approaches to lean, multitasking, capacity, discipline as a finite commodity, implications of the different deployment approaches that relate to these other topics, and also financial incentives. And the idea behind this is, if you're kind of reading outside the field, doing different researches, reading in different journals or articles, or like Scientific American is one of my favorites, you'll come across these different concepts, these different areas of research, and all of a sudden, your brain starts to make these connections, like this is really, really relevant to the work we do. You know, how haven't we made this connection before? So that's really the inspiration behind this. Now thinking about this, you know, questions are pretty important to me. It's probably an understatement of the year, right? Kind of thinking about, are we asking the right questions when we're doing lean in our organization? And are we making tactical and strategic decisions based on fundamental principles of human behavior? When we talk about lean, what are we trying to do with lean? Change the way people think, have people be lean thinkers, better problem solvers. This all relates to behavior in a way. And how are we taking these different the research that's being done elsewhere and trying to understand how does that affect what we're doing in our organization? This is another one that happens in any industry. Do we have tunnel vision? We start to become kind of inbred within our field? Do we mainly read within our literature, or are we maybe spreading our vision a little bit more broadly and trying to bring things out from other fields? And that's really how an individual or an organization gets better. And this last one, we'll get into it. How often are things that make sense or are intuitive or obvious not supported by clinical or behavioral research? I mean, does that resonate with some of you? Some of the things we'll go into here are completely counterintuitive to what we would think would be the way the world works. And how do we start to maybe develop this sort of discipline to start to wrap some of those different things into our decision-making process and try and integrate that into the way we do things in our organization to be much more successful? Okay. Now, this is my opinion from being in a number of different lean groups, some of the more common discussions. I'll just let you read these for a second. Sound like common discussions? So the second one, especially, how often do we have those discussions? Does that usually lead to consensus among your team?
Unless they all came from the same fire.
Exactly. Unless they all came from the same company. Yeah. Otherwise, it's everyone saying, my basis of evidence is my previous employer, my previous company. And it's almost like a battle of wills, right? And the intent behind this, the psychology and sociology of this, is there something more fundamental we should bring into discussion rather than, in my organization we did it this way, your organization you did it this way. Saying, of all these different options, what are these different principles or kind of underlying things that are going on in the human mind that should drive our decision-making process and why we're going to do something one way or another way? Now, these are less common discussions. It's something I think, in my opinion, should have more of. Research on human behavior suggests thus and so. How can this inform what we're going to be doing? This is a strong leader and team when they are engaging and seem to be resisting. A lot of times we just think they just don't get it. But stepping back and thinking they're smart people, they're hardworking people, you know, looking more humbly and saying, how are we not connected? There's a disconnect here. And maybe there's something more fundamentally going on that we can address this in a different way. And this last one I like too. I realize the lean principle of philosophy says to do thus and so. But really kind of challenging. Why is that? what about them? There's usually something underlying it that, like, Toyota or other organizations have developed these kind of practices. There's usually some psychology behind it. We're trying to understand more fundamentally what's going on, what's driving it. Okay, jumping into the first topic, and kind of cadence of this as we go through this. Again, we're not going to go super deep on this. Introduce the topics and introduce a question at the bottom. And after we get done with this, there's going to be a time for networking and discussion. And these would be some of the potential questions we could be discussing after this. Now, one of these comes down to habit formation. And there was a Scientific American article that I read that kind of kicked off some of my thoughts on this. It had to do with the neuroscience of habits. And it showed, I think it was in rat studies, was showing when a rat was learning a new maze, its brain was just alight with activity. It was a functional MRI, I believe they were doing the research. So all the parts of the brain were active during all the time the rat was trying to find its way through the maze. Once the rat knew the way through the maze, it was active at the beginning and active again the rest of the time, it was pretty much on cruise control. So they just set something in my brain, habit formation. It's when someone's learning something new, when you're learning something new, what does it feel like? Is it exhausting or is it exciting? Both. Yeah, it can be exhausting, it can be exciting, right? And what's exhausting, what do we naturally do after a while without some external systemic support? Yep, we go back to the way we did it before. And how long does it take to learn a new habit? Yep, 30 days is a rule of thumb. Yep. So I started thinking, when a new team is learning one of these things, we've been doing it for years. It's habit for us. Do it in our sleep. These new teams, there's a huge cognitive load going through these new teams. I don't think I fully appreciate what they're going through with this. So one of these ideas is how do we start to support this new habit formation? This is one of the fundamental things. Regardless of what one person did or someone else, how do we think about in terms of how is our deployment approach supporting the development of the new habit? And what does it take to do that? And there's a couple different books. Charles Duhigg's new book, The Power of Habit, is a good resource for that. But I just started thinking, again, this question, when we're using Lean and focusing on the process of improvement, how does this really relate to the changing of habits? And we're going to sort of link together some of these different topics as we go through it. But I really just, this is one of my first aha's that kind of got my mind going down this track, the psychology and sociology of this. It goes into this. How many organizations talk about culture, and it's a big, ambiguous, gray, messy, globular thing? Yeah, it's just the way organizations might talk about culture that's always frustrating to me. One of my favorite definitions is, culture is the way we do things around here. It's the things we can observe, the things people do without even thinking about doing them. What does that sound like? It sounds like a habit. Yep. So this is one of those things where habit drives culture. If we're trying to change culture, we have to change what? And we have to change habits. And I have to thank Jay for this quote from Peter Drucker. Culture is a result of doing the same things over and over again. Again, this close link between culture and habits. So this is one of those other questions for us to kind of ponder. How do organizational culture and habits relate to each other? Now, we're all familiar with the concept of right brain thinking versus left brain thinking. Now, how many people in here would consider themselves left brain thinkers, the more analytical? Okay. How many people would consider themselves right brain thinkers? So probably two-thirds left brain thinkers, one-third right brain thinkers. Now the question is, if two-thirds of us are left-brain thinkers, we're introducing lean to organization, which side of the brain are we making a compelling argument to, do you think, if most of us are left-brain thinkers? Yep. We're making these, how often do we make altruistic arguments for teams, too, that this is the best for the organization or for something very large? A lot of times there's kind of that altruistic, logical connection to the organization, this brand or purpose. There's this concept too in the military that a lot of times is a common phrase that soldiers fight that's kind of the people who they're most emotionally connected to, that's who's on their core team. And I think one of those principles is, how do we start to make a little bit more of that argument towards the right brain thinkers and towards their local teams, the people they work closely with? What's in it for them? A lot of times when these things don't stick, the teams are going through the motions. It's great that the entire organization, you know, wants to do this, but our team is in a state of crisis. I assume most of you are familiar with the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Yeah. Sometimes teams are just trying to get through the day. They're right there in the foundation. And we're trying to make an argument for them being self-actualized. So again, this really goes to, you know, what sort of argument are we making? Are we even aware that we're speaking different languages? I think when we present this to some of our teams, we're speaking a different language. We're speaking left brain, they're speaking right brain. We're speaking altruism for the entire organization. They're trying to think about survival day to day in their department, trying to get through the day. Okay. Now, this is an interesting one. Is anyone here familiar with the idea of cognitive economics? Daniel Kahneman? Now, something happened around 2008, right? You remember something happened with the economy around that time? Significant. Now, traditional economics would have said a lot of market factors and traditional economic mechanisms would prevent something like that from happening. But did that stop it from happening? No, it didn't. The economy still collapsed. And one of the things that came out of this was a lot of validation for this idea of cognitive economics, that in traditional economics, it's this idea that the individual person and organizations are trying to maximize their marginal utility. Remember that from Econ 101? So, do you think that's valid, that the average individual person is terribly rational, makes very rational, logical decisions? Definitely not. But a lot of our systems are built upon that. And there were some really interesting studies. One of the ones I like right here, there were some studies that show when people gain or lose a dollar unexpectedly, people feel significantly more pain from losing money unexpectedly than from pleasure from gaining money unexpectedly. And there were some other really interesting simulations they did. They did one where there was a commodity that was decreasing steadily throughout the simulation. And they played a game, they traded different things throughout the simulation. So the commodity is going down towards being worth nothing. The rational thing would be to basically sell and cash out. After study, people basically stayed in the simulation and continued playing until the assets were. So there's all these different simulations, all these different bases of evidence that show basically people aren't terribly rational when it comes to economic decisions. The one same question is, if most of us are left-brain thinkers, and we're working with teams, are we kind of going off of this very rational assumption? Or are there different ways to try and connect with people on a more fundamental basis that relates more to how the brain actually works? Questions is, you know, do we deploy lean assuming that everything is rational, or is there a cognitive aspect to this? And there's another one here that there's a great example of this, that some of the people taking some of the principles from cognitive economics and applying this in a way that made differences in people's lives. One of them had to do with savings. Then they started to say, well, when you auto-enroll people in 401ks, that naturally people, you know, are going to be saving. When you take away that decision step, when someone starts a new job and they're already overloaded by everything with the new job, they're going to sign up for a 401k, auto-enrolling them had a big impact. There was another aspect. They did a simulation with savings for retirement. They put one picture of a person at their current age in front of them and asked them to make decisions about how much they would want to save for retirement. They took another one and artificially aged the picture of the person towards their retirement age and asked them the same question. When they showed that artificially aged picture, people saved more for retirement. So there's some weird things going on in this vessel up here that aren't really necessarily purely logical. What do you think was happening with seeing that aged picture of yourself?
Fear
might be one, yeah. Or empathy for this future self. there's this thing like we're pleasure-seeking beings. We're, you know, seeking pleasure in the now. But this idea was you're actually having empathy for your future self, or fear of, you know, basically shorting this person in the future.
It seems more real.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely, it's more concrete. It's like, well, that is, I hope, I don't want to meet myself with nothing to make that. So this is really planting that seed of, if there's a cognitive economics versus rational economics, what would cognitive lean be? A version of lean which really took into consideration all these cognitive dynamics. Here's another one. Multitasking and capacity. Now, how many of our organizations do you think leaders think, if I give people more, they will get more done? Our highest performing people, if we give them 10 different assignments, they'll get 10 different things done this year. Have any of you tried to apply Hoshin early on in an organization? Well, if you have, they try and pile everything on. Leaders try and pile, you know, these 10 different things we need to get done before the end of the year. Now, there's actually research. One of these things, this is, again, going beyond just one person's experience. Like, I have certain experience with Hoshin and multitasking and everything else. But when you look at this, this is American Psychological Association. Their research showed that even though there are these small switches back and forth, that even brief mental blocks created by shifting between tasks can cost as much as 40% of someone's productive time. And I became even more aware of this working with Jay in IT. And this is kind of a known thing, that the more projects you have going on, it's counterintuitive. You think if you push more work on people, you're going to get more work done. But if you actually have people focusing on one thing and focusing on the velocity of that, you can get more done. This has to do with also coaching up in our organizations. Is this intuitive for our leaders? Are they very comfortable saying this is the top priority this year? Or are they saying these 15 things are a top priority?
Yes.
No, 15 top priorities. That's what we call it, an oxymoron, a paradox, something like that. So this might have to do with some of our coaching with regards to different things like ocean planning and other things such as that. Again, it's something that's very counterintuitive to what they're doing. And the more different things they add on, the more things they have going on in parallel, the more productivity that's lost. And some of the questions related to this, you know, how can we apply this to teams and to leaders? How can we apply this to layout, team norms, social planning, instant messaging? We're in a world of instant messaging. So that's the consideration of that. Here's another interesting one. This fight with regards to discipline as a finite commodity. And this is actually something that is in finite supply. It's something that's very, I thought, very counterintuitive. That within a given day, within a given period of time, you only have so much discipline. And the example they use here, they had people sitting either indulging in cookies or resisting cookies for a period of time. And then they had to try and solve an unsolvable puzzle. Wants how long someone persists trying to solve an unsolvable puzzle. The people who had ended up resisting, they spent less time persisting trying to solve the puzzle. So there's only so much discipline you have within a given period of time. There was also some other research that had to do with glucose and how that affected discipline. That's a whole other aspect of this. But actually, one of the takeaways of this was to improve discipline, sipping small amounts of lemonade. It was kind of an interesting side insight of this. But one of the thoughts of this, you're having to exhibit discipline when you're learning something new. This is where it wraps back into habit formation. When you're learning a new habit, what does that require? Focus and discipline, right? And if you only have so much of that, we have to think about how are we metering out the discipline we're expecting the teams to learn something new and establish a new habit. Now, once it becomes a habit, does it require as much discipline? No, then it becomes that's just automatic. So this is where it starts to become culture, discipline, culture, habit formation, all these things start to really weave together to kind of unify the picture. And the next slide relates to this. And what sort of self-control and do the initiatives require? And how do we manage this? This kind of leads into the next slide. There were some early discussions on this during the socializing before this too. How often do people ask us, you know, what sort of event should we do? A large event to small events, you know, an A3 versus something else. Now think about these. How do Kaizen events, value stream mapping, A3s, and the litany of other approaches we use, what are the different implications of those on habit formation, discipline, culture change? You think about two examples, a value stream map, 5 days of dedicated time versus more of a kata approach. Yeah. So as we're discussing, doing approach A versus B, trying to think about how do we plant some of these seeds and thinking about the psychological, the neurological, better performance, right? People with higher incentives, people do more, people accomplish more, will win, right? You throw money at the problem, we'll solve it. No? Some of the kind of non-intuitive stuff. According to numerous studies, laboratories, workplace, classroom, etc., rewards typically undermine the very process they are intended to enhance. The findings suggest that the failure may give an incentive less to a glitch in that program than to the inadequacy of the psychological assumptions that ground all such plans.
Yeah, specifically, add an external motivator or an external incentive to a cognitive task, even a rudimentary cognitive task, performance plummets.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's documented by Daniel Pink in his book Drive.
Yeah.
So that's an example of that. Let's say you're going to do modest problem solving, and you know, if you win, you get a small reward, or you win, you get a big reward. The more you ramp up the reward, the more the performance goes down, because your ability to be creative and be interested in the problem is competing with your fascination with the money. It's a really good RSA Animate video on YouTube, explaining Daniel Pink's Drive in about 15 minutes.
Yeah. It's fascinating too. But a non-cognitive task, there's some...
Oh, yeah, it's physical. It works perfectly.
Yeah. And there was another example of this where there was an activity that people did free of charge. They volunteered their time, and they did a study. They kept one group as a control, continued to have them just volunteer their time. Another group, they started paying them a certain amount of money. And they did that for a while, and then they took away the money from the test group. Guess what happened? Participation. They basically almost all of them stopped doing the activity. So it's another implication, like you get an incentive, then you take it away. What happens then?
Yeah, true story about an economist moved into a new place, and these kids were playing outside his window really loud. You know, kind of urchins, and he told them to shut up, they'd be louder on purpose. So he figured he'd get them to stop. He went out and said, "Hey, I really love hearing you guys play. It reminds me of my childhood. Here's a dollar. Plan every day, that'd be great." The next day, he says, "I've only got 80 cents. The next day, I've only got 40 cents. By the end of the week, they're like, "Well, I'm not going to play for nothing." And they left.
Well, that's fantastic. That's a smart man. Well, we're not working dogs. Yeah, so this is, again, another one of these examples of how many different times, and this might be to do with like multitasking too. We're coaching up with our leaders and talking about incentive plans. They're trying to drive performance by this. How can we start to influence them with some of these insights? I mean, one of the questions too here, what are other motivators other than money that we can use to drive some of the outcomes we desire? There's some other research on this in terms of what actually drives employee satisfaction, with a lot less of it being monetary. recognition, things like that. Okay, that's the end of the topic. So again, it was a very high level sort of introduction to these different things, just for discussion.
No, the other one.
That's fine.
Oh, the other direction. The other direction?
Yeah.
Okay. So, again, are there any other topics? We're basically moving into the open discussion time, the networking and open discussion time. We want these different topics to be things that would spur discussion along with networking. Are there any other topics that interest you? And if any of these topics interest you, do you want to raise your hand and we'll do natural groupings around you too? And further discussions after this. So that was the next exercise we're going to do. And we're going to rotate around the different topics over time. Did any of these jump out at anyone? These are the basic questions we pose at the end of each of the different sections.
I'd be interested in talking about motivators.
Okay. The incentive one?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else interested in the incentives? Topics.
I'm not sure it's on your list, but psychological safety and the ability to be honest.
Oh, and again, if there's other topics not on this list, by all means. So,
yeah, psychological safety and the ability to be really candid and honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Does anyone want to come to that topic?
Like, we can take exactly how to create it.
Any other topics anyone? On these other topics jump out here?
Behavioral or cognitive economics and the implications as to how we develop programs based on the way we expect people to act, based on the way, as opposed to the way they actually act in different ways.
Yeah. Okay, anyone want to come to this one? I think I'll probably come to this one. Okay. Anything else? If not, this is your time to mingle, talk, discuss.
Yeah. I like the culture and habits discussion.
Culture and habits. Okay. Anyone else want to join the culture and habits discussion? Okay.
Thank you, Brock.
Nice going.